Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. It's time for Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. I'm your host, Tom Lounges, and our first hour show is going to feature Toto vocalists. You remember Toto? What a great band they were and still are. We're going to talk to Joseph Williams about that band. We're also going to be focusing on Joseph's brand new star-studded solo album called Denizen Tenant. We'll be spotlighting songs from it throughout the show. Hour two, originally we had Brian Wheat of Tesla. Sadly, he is stuck in a Texas airport, so we're going to have to reschedule that. More on the second hour after your headlines. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide, wherever you may be, at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, your host of Midwest Beat. Midwest Beat is a program all about music and the people who make it. Well, today we had Brian Wheat scheduled for our second hour. Brian is the founding member of Tesla, that rockin' 80s and 90s band. He's got a brand new book called Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla. Well, his crazy life is indeed living up to its name, because I just got a call a few minutes before the show that Brian is having difficulties with flights because of the snowstorms in Texas. Things are delayed, so he's going to miss the show today. We are going to reschedule him for a few weeks down the road. So we will have Brian on. He does apologize for the situation, and so do I. But we'll be talking with Brian Wheat coming in the coming weeks. So on the second hour, we're going to rerun last week's interview with Jim Hilligans, the lead singer of Bonfire, an AC/DC tribute from Chicago that's headlining a big show at the Art Theater tomorrow. So it's a very current interview about tomorrow's show. We'll have Jim joining us on the second hour to talk about that. But right now, we've got a special guest for the first hour that I've been waiting to talk to. Now, if you joined us last week, you remember we had Steve Lukather on the show. Steve, of course, founding member of Toto. He's performed with so many different bands over the years as a session player, especially Ringo and his all-star band. But Steve has a brand new solo album out called I Found the Sun Again. And a tandem piece, a companion piece, if you will, Toto singer Joseph Williams has Denizen Tenant, his own solo album, and both guys are on each other's albums, along with some other rock star, superstar lineups. So we're going to feature Joe Williams, the vocalist of Toto, to talk about his new solo album, as well as other projects that he's been involved in over the years, including Toto. So all of that will be happening momentarily. But first, let's let the music do the talking, and let's sample something off Joe Williams' new album, which is coming out February 26th. So you're privy to an early radio play on some of the music here today. This is the closing track of Denizen, and it's called World Broken, and indeed it is. We'll have Joseph Williams joining us on the other side. Stay with us. What a great voice this guy's got.
Gotta roll on. see that promised day where it all runs clean and sound. But it doesn't feel like people care about the land. It's all coming down, yeah.
Music, World Broken. That's debut stuff off the latest album, the new album coming out on February 26th, Denizen Tenant from Joseph Williams, one of those voices that we all know from so many different things. He's been a session player. He's been featured in films. And, of course, he's very famous as the lead singer of Toto for many, many years and many, many hits. And he's joining us now to talk about this new album and some of the other things that has gone on in his incredible life. Joe Williams, are you with us?
I sure am. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward to this interview. My engineer, Jose, has as well. He's a big fan of yours. He's a big fan of your dad's. And we just have so much to talk about. And this album is incredible. I hope it was okay that we played that song, World Broken. Right now, it's one of my favorites off this great new album.
Well, thanks very much. No, I love that you played that. It was actually cool hearing it, you know, waiting for you to have me up. That was awesome. I love that. That's my, like, lament for the record. But, yeah, it was great hearing it. I hadn't heard it in a while.
Excellent. Well, it's a good song, and it seems to describe the environment we are all living in right now. Everything seems to be broken, but we're going to fix it, I'm sure. I'm confident in that.
I agree completely. Yeah, I mean, this was a piece that was kind of started pre-pandemic anyway. I mean, the first part of it is more about sort of my internal stuff, and you know, anyway, and then it is broadens out, and talks about the world. But yeah, I mean, we're all in a pickle for
yep.
sure right now, especially the middle of the country. I mean, we feel awful out here for everything that's going on in, you know, in Texas and in the middle of the country. It's just horrible with the weather. But, you know, we got to roll on, I guess.
Right. Well, my second hour guest was scheduled to be Brian Wheat from Tesla, and I just got a text and a call from his agent and from Brian saying he's tied up with flight delays because of all the snow and craziness in Texas. So we're going to bump him to another week. But I just, you know, you don't think of Texas as being snowbound.
No, you sure don't, and it's just—it's amazing. Just this insane swing where the cold has gone all the way down there. But, you know, hopefully this too shall pass, as they say.
Right. Well, let's talk about this new album. Now, you mentioned it started pre-pandemic, and you and Steve Lukather are working in tandem. I understand it's coming out as a package deal, also separately, and thank goodness that you are both releasing it on vinyl. I own a couple of vinyl stores, and I'm excited that we're going to have it in stock real soon. And it's colored vinyl on top of it.
It is, and they just sent me finished albums and CDs and stuff, so I just got to take a look at the package and the whole thing that the album, the record company did, and it's really quite amazing. My record has the sort of orange motif going on, and the vinyl is orange. It looks like orange marble. It's incredible. And Luke's, whose album is sort of blue, the vinyl is the same thing, but blue marble. It's really incredible.
Are you a fan of vinyl? I mean, we've grown up the last couple of generations here with CDs and MP3s. Vinyl kind of went out in 1990-ish, so it's a whole different thing. Are you still a fan of vinyl, and did you record this stuff analog or digital, given that you're in modern times now?
Well, both. I mean, we recorded both analog and digitally. I mean, my Luke's album was probably way more analog, I would say, because he basically had a band set up in a studio, and they did it sort of old school, where you cut a track and sweeten that track and then move on to the next track. So, you know, it's a lot of microphones and a lot of analog gear going eventually into a digital system. That's basically how everything works these days. There's not much tape used anymore, other than for, you know, reverbs and things like that. And my album is probably best described as more digital than that, because although, you know, there are musicians like, for instance, Simon Phillips, who's playing on one of the songs, he's that was all very analog-y, but it eventually goes digital, you know, to, sort of in order to manipulate it in the computer, you know.
Now, were these songs written for this project in mind, or were these some songs you had laying around that you just didn't have a home for yet?
Well, they were not songs laying around looking for a home. These were all pieces that were sort of in the works from, you know, going back as far as 2016, you know, little tidbits of pieces that I started. But the idea of doing a solo album started back then. I didn't know when I was going to do it, but I knew I wanted to do another one. We were touring a lot, so I didn't know when I was going to have the time to sit down and do it. So I had a few pieces sort of in the works from just the idea that I was going to do it at some point. And then in 2020, I knew I was going to have the time to really sit down and finish, you know.
Now, how are you going to get out and promote this? Obviously, we're not in a point where big tours are going to be happening, but there are some small venues that are starting to pop up doing a little bit of live stuff, and of course, the drive-in scenario where everybody gets an outdoor stage. Summer's coming up. What's the plan with you and Luke? Are you going to tour together, separately? How are you going to get the music out to the people?
Well, we're keeping Toto alive. I mean, the idea is that, you know, Toto isn't finished, and it's just some couple of guys that don't want to tour anymore and can't. It's as simple as that. We still want to tour, and we did put together, you know, a new group of guys to do that. And it's basically just a matter of venues opening up for us to get out there and play. And that's the intention. That's obviously our plan, is to do that. So we're just sort of waiting for a few places that suit us and that we would normally go to be available to play at is really the biggest thing. But I am certainly not opposed to, you know, a lot of these ideas you're talking about, like these drive-in things for, you know, happening in the summer and stuff. I would love to do some of that stuff.
Okay. So anything in the works yet, or is it too premature for that?
No, you know, we have European commitments, you know, thus far, and it's basically a matter of whether or not we can go.
So we have
plans to start this year, if pandemic permitting. That's basically the best way to put it. So we do a lot of business overseas, and so we have, you know, we started with putting together dates over there, and then we'll see how the U.S. opens up. But listen, it's just as bad everywhere else. So.
Right.
You know, it may take a little while to get back to the same type of venues we were playing, But Luke and I are open to all kinds of, you know, to whatever, any chance to get out and play, you know, for real, you know, especially in front of people. That's, you know, that's what we love to do. So any of those opportunities that come up or that we can create for ourselves, we're certainly going to take advantage of.
Okay. You are listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial, streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. My guest today on Midwest Beat, Joseph Williams, lead singer of Toto, a guy who is steeped in music, grew up in music, is enveloped in music in so many ways. We're going to talk about a little of that, but right now we're focusing on Denizen Tenet, his new solo album. Thank you for joining us. Joseph, what's the title about? Denizen Tenet.
Denizen Tenet. Well, there are two words that mean the same thing. We are denizens of the United States and tenants of also the same. So I wrote the song with a guy named Steve Overton, who is just this amazing guitar player, bass player, and an incredibly witty guy. He's got a straight, you know, interesting sense of humor. And in the context of the lyric, it's kind of about a bad breakup roommate situation. Somebody who's, you know, sort of hung around too long. Mm-hmm. So it's like that person. So it's like, you know, denizen tenant. You know, you stayed around twice as much as you should have. So the other, you know, the other description that I use is just that a denizen tenant is like the guy that comes to your party and at 5 a.m. you got to tell him, dude, you gotta go home. Come on, you know, that's sort of a denizen tenant. And I loved that as a title, just because, you know, back in the day, you know, in the 80s in Toto, I was the denizen tenant of Toto. Those guys used to have to constantly tell me to go home.
Excellent story there. You want to play that one?
Sure.
All right.
Absolutely.
This is the title track. We'll be back with Joseph after this. For all you denizen tenants hanging out, waiting for some reason to go home, don't leave yet. Denison Tennant, that is the title track. Joseph Williams' new album, You Can't Get It Just Yet. It's coming out February 26th on Mascot Records. It's part of a companion piece, I guess you'd say, along with Steve Lukather's new album, which we previewed last week, I Found the Sun Again. And it's also being packaged together as a box set, and both are available as vinyl, CD, and of course, digitally. So great stuff here. Joseph Williams, the man behind that album, is my guest today here on Midwest Beat. Joseph, that album is similar but yet different than Luke's album. His has a little more guitar-driven rock. Your stuff is a little jazzier, maybe a little more proggy. It's interesting, though, because they do lend themselves to a companion packaging. Did you record simultaneously on these, because you're both on each other's albums?
No, you know, they were always intended as separate, you know, solo projects. You know, when we finished our last touring cycle, really, in at the end of 2019, Luke had always had a plan to go in and make that record. It was made with musicians, you know, not involved Koto at all. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think the drummer was Greg Bissonette, who he plays in Ringo's band with. So he had intentions to do that. My involvement was just kind of as a co-writer and the help, you know, associate producer on vocals and backgrounds and stuff like that. And mine, I had always planned to do mine also completely separately. And once 2020 became an open year, obviously also pre-pandemic, I took that year to make mine. So they were always separate entities. And they are, you know, they are very different, you know, mm-hmm. albums. They're very different records. I think that the mere fact that, like, we're in the same band together and people, there's a chemistry kind of between our us and our sounds, that somehow it does sort of work together as a whole if you put them together. So it's interesting. That's why, and we did it because we thought, you know, we might as well do something also for Toto fans, since it's taking so long for us to be able to get out there and play.
Right.
So as well as putting out solo material, you know, we thought if we put it together, it might be something interesting for Toto fans, like a giant, weird Toto record.
It has a different flavor, a different approach and sound from Toto's sound, though. What makes these songs different that they wouldn't be applicable for Toto, that they are best suited for solo, both with you and Steve?
Well, I think, you know, with Luke's record, he just did, you know, songs that he wanted. He had some great originals, and you know, the song we did for Ringo started out as a piece that was a gift to him for his 80th birthday. So that wasn't originally part of his project. His project has a very clear tone, you know, and sort of thematic quality in the music throughout the whole thing. It's just you know, rock, and it's Luke. It's him, you know. Mm-hmm. My album, you know, is completely different in that the songs were written and kind of crafted over long periods of time, and it's more production based, and you know, it's more like actually how a Toto record would be produced. In terms of the songs, you know, a lot of the stuff on my solo album would never have gotten past like David Page and those guys to finish for a solo album. But, you know, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but, you know, it, with a Toto album, it's completely collaborative, and you have, you know, referring to the last project we did, you had four, you know, producers and artists in the room producing and picking the songs and writing the songs and all of that. So that's, in that way, these songs are very different. I didn't have anybody to tell me not to do this or that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If that makes sense, you know what I mean? So in that way, these tunes are much more personal. And also, I feel like, you know, different from a Toto project, I can get away with stuff I probably couldn't with Toto.
Right. And for the listeners, you can get all the information on Toto and on both of these solo projects at TotoOfficial.com. It's got the lead of the website is all about the new solo albums, as well as dates about the tour coming up. It's Dogs of Oz. Is that correct? The tour?
Yeah, Dogs of Oz. Which is, you
love
know,
that name.
Luke. Yeah, it's Luke and I are the last two dogs from Oz that are, you know, playing out there. You know, it's It was either that or Dorothy's dog, something along those lines.
Right.
But it's you know, Toto's still alive and well, and you know, every other guy that's still with us, and you know, and is still a member. It's just that, you know, people can't tour anymore, or certain people don't want to. And if they did, they'd be out there. It's just that Luke and I are the only dogs that want to keep doing it.
Right. Well, David Paich is on both your albums, correct?
He is. He is. He absolutely is. And he also will come and play live when he can, you know?
Okay. So Toto's a living entity. It's not just a touring project. You expect to have more recordings as well with the band, with the new lineup?
Well, you know how it is with musicians. We don't go away. We just die. So.
Well, don't do that.
Well, no, I mean, you know what I mean. I mean,
right.
Hopefully that happens after like 100 years old.
You know, right, right.
In Italian, they say, Gentagna, you know. But so hopefully that's the case. But the point being is that, you know, as long as I'm kicking, I'm still going to be making music, and Luke is still going to be making music and recording it. Whether or not it's a Toto project just depends upon how, you know, how the business of Toto, you know, proceeds. From mm-hmm. this point forward, right? You know, right now we just are focused on trying to get back to being a touring entity, but
right.
it's tough, you know. So, yeah. So here we are, and we're both really, really grateful to have these projects to get out there so that we can keep things alive, you know.
Well, you and Luke have been friends since high school, as I understand it. Like 13, 14 years old, you guys started playing music together. And, of course, you're steeped in a musical family, which we're going to talk about momentarily. But how did you and Luke get together? And why did it take so long to get you into Toto if you've been friends all these years? I mean, you're, in my opinion, the best vocalist I've ever had. And not taking nothing away from Bobby or any of the other guys. You're the other guys.
Well, you're too kind. That's just definitely too kind. I mean, my favorite vocalist is Bobby.
Okay.
I mean, I was a fan of the band first because I was a friend of those guys, and I was excited for their success. And, you know, Bobby was somebody who was from out of town or whatever, and I thought that he was just a ringer. He was just, you know, he just had this amazing natural thing. So I'm one of his biggest fans, so having said that, you know. And I forgot what your original question was.
Was basically why it took so long for you to become the singer of Toto, since you were together with Steve before Toto formed, really. I mean, why did you guys not just package it up and say, you know, we're going to form our first band together and just stay together?
Well, we weren't together like that. I mean, you know, Luke and I were more acquaintances when we were teenagers. First of all, he's 3 years older. So when I think I met him when I was around 14.
Okay.
And he had played in a band with my brother, Mark, who's a drummer, who actually was Air Supply's drummer for many years. So they played, and my brother's older than me, a couple of years older. So my brother was about 16, and Luke was maybe 17 or 15 and 16, something like that. And they had played together briefly in like a couple of gigs, that kind of thing. So that was how I met him. And also, we all knew him around the area where we lived because he played at all of the same dances and high schools that like our band used to. You know, when I finally got into a little band that played dances and stuff as the singer, we would run into each other, that kind of thing. But not, you know, I was years younger, so I wasn't really paid much attention to it, if you see what I mean. I was like 14, 15.
Right.
So later when I was making my first solo record around 1980, somewhere in there, He came in so gladly. Jay Gruska, who actually knew him better than I did, asked him to come in, and he remembered immediately who I was and came in and, you know, we became friends like immediately. And it was such a great experience. And Toto was already in full swing, you know, when that was happening. I mean, they had the, you know, Hold the Line was a hit. I was 17 years old when that was a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm sorry, 17 when they recorded it, 18 when it was a hit. So Toto was pre my getting started it altogether and as a career in singing. So that's why I wasn't probably thought of for that. But when they were having a rough time with trying to find a singer and having, you know, had a problem with the second guy that they brought in, that was when they thought of me, I guess. So
okay.
that's kind of how that happened.
All right. You have been in music probably since birth, even in the womb. because your dad, of course, John Williams, one of the greatest composers of all time. You yourself have written for films and done a lot of film work and session work. When did you know that you were going to be in the family business, so to speak, that this was your calling? You didn't want to go be a dentist or something else?
Probably as a little kid, just eight, somewhere in there. I knew kind of that, I guess that was for me. I mean, that's what everybody else did in the house.
Mm-hmm.
my siblings took learning instruments and studying and because my parents obviously wanted us to learn how to play the piano, and my brother took cello for a while, and my sister's actually, plays the flute and violin, a few other things. I was the one of the three of us that was like, nah, I don't want to take lessons. I just wanted to do kind of what my mother did, which was she was a singer and a dancer and an actress, but in her younger years. And that was what fascinated me, was that kind of stage performing. So I always sat at the piano and sort of noodled around and probably pissed my dad off because I didn't take it very seriously on an instrument. But I think my voice was always eventually going to be the instrument, and then learning the rest of my musical education came mostly during my time as a composer, is where I really learned stuff.
Now you were the voice in The Lion King, which of course one of the greatest animated scores of all time. How did you get involved in that? I mean, was that through your dad, or how did, do you still have to audition, or is it kind of a given that you're John's son and you got a great voice and you're going to do this?
No, but it had nothing to do with my dad.
Okay.
I had a history in my early 20s doing record commercials, in background groups and that kind of thing, and I had worked for several different producers doing those kinds of things. And in that period of time, I met a few guys who later became music executives at Disney. And so at one point, they contacted me because they thought I would be a good fit to do the singing parts of Aladdin, in the movie Aladdin.
Okay.
And so they had me come in and they had me sing all of the songs in Aladdin to sort of match, the guy who played the actual part. And everybody liked it, except that, the composer wanted the actor who was doing the voice of the actual speaking voice, wanted him to also be singing, which made sense.
Mm-hmm.
So having done that gig, they later thought of me again when it came time to do some demos for The Lion King when Tim Rice and Elton John were working out the material. So they asked me in to just do some demos, just to sing some stuff. And through that, a year or so later, maybe 6 months, they asked me back into Hans Zimmer's studio to just sing a couple of parts and to just replace or just to be the singing voice for the character in these few spots. And I knew the tunes because I had worked on them in the demos, but mm-hmm. had no idea that they would call me back and that I would ever end up in the film. So it was a complete stroke of luck, really. But I owe it to these guys, Chris Montan and a few guys over at Disney.
Okay. Now you're a dad, and about the time that was coming out, your daughters were probably fairly young, I'm thinking. So what was it like to be Simba to your kids?
Well, they loved it. I mean, of course, they thought it was, they giggled, they thought it was just the cutest thing. They still do. I mean, I think people know me probably more from that than Toto.
Right.
It's just those few lines. I mean, once people read that, that's who that person is, But that was heard round the world, as they say. I'm thrilled about that one, and it was such a fluke.
Right.
At least I feel like it was. But I feel incredibly fortunate that they didn't have to actually have me in there, but it worked out great.
Well, you've done guest vocals on a lot of albums. You've had several solo albums of your own, Dennis and Tennant being the latest, and, of course, a good half dozen or more Toto albums out there. What is the game plan moving forward? Are you going to be working more with TV and film since at least at the moment we're in downtime still? Are you still active in scoring and composing for visuals?
I'm not active. I haven't been since I started touring again with Toto, and actually some years before that I stopped. But I'm not opposed to it. I'll put it to you that way. But I mean, my focus just as of late, because of these records and them coming out and everything, has been, and also just because it's a new interest of mine, has been film and videos, making them. So the YouTube videos that accompany these songs as they've been released, I've been making them, you know, just at home, you know, and building my little green screen studio. And so that's, you know, I'm weird. I get interested in different things and pursue them for a year or so.
Okay. Now, your daughter, Hannah, sings on this album with you. Is she following in the family business? And what about Emma?
Well, Emma is, for sure. And you know, they both are. I shouldn't say that. I mean, right now at this time, my daughter, Hannah, she just had a baby. So she's got a 3-month-old son. So, and she, you know, before that, she went to college and studied psychology with no real intention of, you know, pursuing music. But she's so great, and she really could be a professional, you know, singer in any capacity, like for sessions or something like that. She's just so good, and she learned how to work in the studio. Both of them did. Emma, my daughter Emma, has been writing songs a little bit more seriously for the last couple of years, trying, you know, kind of building up a little bit of a vibe and a persona, and she's pursuing something. She's kind of crafting what it is that's going to end up being her.
So is she coming to Dad for advice, or is it like, I don't want your input, Dad? I'm doing this on my own.
She comes to me for every other kind of advice, but that she is definitely I don't need your input on this one.
Excellent. Well, I know that that Luke's son Trevor is going to be releasing an album this year, also on Mascot Records. Do you see Emma joining the family on Mascot? And is Mascot something that you guys are doing yourself, or is it an outside company? I'm trying to wrap my head around if this is your label or not.
No. Mascot is a very real company in the Netherlands, based in the Netherlands.
Okay.
You know, most of the business that Toto does has been overseas. Not that that's the reason why this record company, you know, we work with this record company. Luke has worked with them before on his solo projects, and I think that most of their projects in the past have been sort of guitar based. Maybe I think I've got that vibe on the but they've expanded and they've got, you know, other things going on, and they're a great company, and they've got a lot of reach, especially throughout Europe. And they're starting to just really expand, and they're just great, great people, just really wonderful guys to work with. And it was just so very easy. And, you know, they took my album in after it was finished. I had made it completely on my own. So Luke put that together, and they're a wonderful group. So, yeah, no, they're a very real and separate thing.
Okay. And well, the packaging and everything screams professionalism. I mean, I love the packaging. I like the mugshot kind of look that both of you have on your album.
Yeah, that was definitely intentional. We had done a photo session in Austria before a show. A photographer had shown up and wanted to just take a quick shot of the four of us before we went on stage. And it was this mugshot. You know, he sent it to us, and it ended up, you know, this very cool Western-looking mugshot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw, you know, when I chose that to use for my solo album. This was before all of the connection between Luke's and my albums was going to happen. He also loved that picture. And when I tried to get it, like we had a problem with the photographer who took it. So we recreated the look in the session and did the whole thing together. And that's basically how we came up with the concept of both and how both records have that look.
Okay. The other thing that I'm wanting to straighten out, and that is they are solo albums, but they're also kind of subtitled as the Players Club. What is the Players Club? Is that kind of like the Hollywood Vampires of the old days?
You know, it's a very good question. You know, I've seen that too, and I still haven't really made a proper inquiry as to what that means. But, you know, it sounds like just a, it sounds like something very exclusive that I would certainly want to belong to. So, who knows?
You guys have got some incredible guest musicians on both albums. Some of them bleed over to, between the two, but mostly individual for yours and for his. With you, I was very excited to see the name Leland Sklar. I have been a huge fan of Leland since I saw him with John Denver 25, 30 years ago on stage. I didn't know he was still performing and active. I haven't seen his name in a while. So tell me a little bit about Leland. I didn't know he was still doing it.
He's still not only still doing it, but I mean, he has a pretty successful YouTube channel that he literally goes every single day and does content. He goes on there and talks and, you know, performs with, you know, with music going on, you know, in the background. He's a wonderful guy, and just with so much experience and knowledge of being on the road with how many of all the musicians that he's played with and mm-hmm. projects that he's played on. And I had the fortunate opportunity to do a couple of years with Toto touring with him. Excuse me. And he's just a remarkable guy, just a sweetheart of a guy and an incredible player. And I reached out to him to play on it. And he was like, no problem. Send me, he was so humble. He's like, I don't know what I can do for you, but I said, believe me, this is perfect. So that's how he ended up on the record. But he's just a joy. And the knowledge in that guy's head, forget about it.
He makes everything look so effortless, and yet he's one of the best in the business.
He truly is. He really is. So. And just a great, great cat, you know. So, win-win.
Yeah. You and Steve both did two or three covers on each album. You have two. You do the Beatles' If I Fell, and then you took on Peter Gabriel's Don't Give Up, which is daunting, I would think. That is a remarkable song that is indelibly Peter's, and you gave it your own spin, your own personality and fingerprints. Why did you choose those?
Well, by accident, really. I mean, I obviously love both of those tunes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have, you know, pursued it. But, kind of accidentally, mostly with the Peter Gabriel song, I was taking a break from working on something else. And I was watching it on YouTube, the video with Kate Bush and him and Peter Gabriel, and it's just one of my favorite videos, my favorite song. And I just sort of turned to the left where my keyboard is and started playing the changes and singing it myself just because I love the tune. And I hit record, and then I just kind of got carried away and started, and I basically made the track all the way through, in basic form.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, okay, well, maybe I'll finish this and see what comes of it. And so I did, and not realizing that I had to eventually fill the Kate Bush slot, who was going to do the female part of the song, and how was it going to work? So once I dipped my toe in that water, it pulled me under for sure. But but it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and I thought that having Hannah sing on it. Sing with me on it would be nice because the lyric also could lend itself to a father-daughter conversation, I thought. So it made sense, and she's such a beautiful singer. So
did,
I thought that was a wonderful way to go. But I didn't have a conscious intention of, like, I'm going to do my massive version of a Peter Gabriel song. It was just by accident, really.
Was it easy to coax Hannah to sing?
You know, at first, maybe not so much, but then once she kind of understood where I was going with it, she was, when do we start?
Well, we're going to play that just so the listeners can hear her beautiful voice and hear your take on this. We'll be back a final time to say goodbye to Joe Williams after this, but don't give up. This show is far from over. This is new music off Denizen Tenet, which is on Mascot Records. We'll give you more details on that and websites again after this. Don't Give Up, Peter Gabriel's song in the hands of Joseph Williams and his daughter Hannah. Great stuff. It's featured on the new Joseph Williams album, Denizen Tenant. And that's coming out on February 26th, same day as last week's guest Steve Lukather's album, which is called I Found the Sun Again. We have been blessed this last couple of weeks to have these guys on. Talk about monster talents that everyone in the business respects, and they get invited to play on all these great albums as session players, as friends, and we'll be hearing more, I'm sure, from both and the Players Club when we find out what that is exactly. We'll have to have a private Players Club party. I hope I get an invite.
Exactly.
Hannah's beautiful on that. She really is. What was her feeling when she heard the playback on the final thing, or sees it on the album now?
She's thrilled. I mean, she's completely thrilled. She just, you know, she's just had a baby. My grandson was born 3 months ago.
So congrats.
She's got her hand. Thank you. She's got her hands full. But you know, I just brought over a couple of copies of the project to her, and she's incredibly thrilled. This was unexpected. I came up with the idea of having her on there, and now she's thrilled, and she worked hard on it too. You know, I did mm-hmm. she did a pass, and then about a week later, after hearing it, she's like, I can do better than that. Came in and did some, some changes. She's great. You know, so she's thrilled.
You mentioned Emma's got a project. Do you know when that might be coming to fruition?
Hopefully soon. I mean, the thing with Emma is that she's collected, I don't know now, probably 25, 30, 40 tunes. I mean, really, she's really been just prolific over a long period of time and kind of, forming a sound. She has a band right now that she's in that's really actually pretty good. They're called Smack Champion.
Okay.
And so that's her band currently, and she's just they're working out their material. They're just rehearsing and recording and sort of working out their deal. But we're definitely going to hear from Emma.
Well, I look forward to having her on the show some point soon when this all comes to pass. Again, we talked about the DNA of the Williams family. It's so incredible, and now you've got another generation coming up with your new grandson. Your wife, Amy, was also in the business, but hasn't been for a while. Do you ever plan to do a duo thing with her, or is she just happy to observe?
Well, she may end up doing something, on her own. We haven't been together for quite some time, but she may. We did a project at one point when the kids were little. I mean, when I met her, she had a deal almost with... Okay. With Jimmy Iovine, I forget what the record company was called at the time, but Gene Simmons was managing her, and she had these incredible, demos ready to become a record. And I met her because she played live at the same club I was singing backgrounds for Katie Sagal, and that same evening. So that was where we met, and she was wailing on her way to this deal, and then it didn't happen for some reason. It just as
things
very
do
common and
right
in, yeah exactly it's actually common in the business.
Well, it's
but then we got together and we got married and had kids and your hands get full and her priorities changed. But then when the kids were little, we did like almost a full album's worth of songs on her that still exist that are fantastic. But whether she ends up pursuing something, who knows? I'm not sure.
Right. Well, it's
she's,
clear
she's
where
terrific though.
Where Hannah and Emma get their talent, and both parents amazing talents, grandparents amazing talents. Is there anything, Joseph, that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to let my listeners know? And then we're going to have you pick a song because I've been picking all the songs so far. So what have we not talked about or let people know about?
Well, the only other thing I would mention is just a few things about the album, and that is just, like the involvement of Jay Gruska, who produced my first solo album back in 1981, and later became my brother-in-law and the father of my niece and nephew, and total family,
mm-hmm.
and has had an unbelievably long and incredibly successful career in television composing. But he, he's just an insanely great songwriter and producer, and his contribution to the album is ginormous. You know, it's not just a, I didn't just do it completely by myself. I have to make sure to be, that he's mentioned.
Okay.
You know, it was a big part of it. Black Dahlia is one of the tunes that, that he produced, you know, from the beginning to the end. And then the ballad, No Lessons, which is probably the song I would have you play just because it's very different for me. And mm-hmm. He wrote it with his wife, who has also known me most of my life. I think I've known her longer than I've known Jay. And she is current wife. And Jay, the piece was like almost written for me to sing. Just it was the kind of she wrote it sort of about my experiences in a way. So that's why it was hit home for me, and it feels so great to sing. But their composition is so brilliant and not really something I would sit down at the piano and naturally write. It's mm-hmm. Jay Gruska. So, but it's such a great piece, I feel, for the album, and vocally it's, you know, different for me. So that's the only other thing I would mention, really.
Okay.
Other than just I pray and hope and pray that the pandemic starts to ease up so that people can kind of get their lives back. It's just horrible. And pray the weather starts to warm up. Which
yeah.
It will. We all know.
Yeah. It's definitely been bad here in the Midwest outside of Chicagoland. So I'm with you on that prayer. Well, keep up with both Luke and with Joseph at totoofficial.com. That seems to be the best place to get all the current news as well as the tour on the group. And we're going to leave you with that song. If that's the one you like, No Lessons. I like it especially because it's a different flavor for this album, perhaps because of Jay handling most of it. But I also like the B3. I think that's a nice touch.
That's all Jay's arrangement, and you know, he's an amazing guy. I mean, I was with him along the way for sure, but that's all him. You know, you got to give credit. I mean, the vocals, my contribution is really what it is. So it's a privilege to have that tune, and it should, you know, I'd like love it to be heard.
All right, this is it, Joseph. Thank you so much for your time. We do appreciate it, my friend.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Stay really safe and love to the family and good luck with this album.
Thanks very much.
All
Take
right.
care.
Bye-bye.
Don't just give away my heart. Keep my secrets to myself. Hold my tenderness apart. But then no one counted on you. Least of all me. You took everything I had. And everything I used to be. The older I get, the less I seem to know who I am and how everything is supposed to go. There were so many signs, but I saw. Cause there are no lessons, and this isn't one of them. I paid my dues till I was broke. Tried every script to fix my life. It's like trying to take the edge off with the dull side of the knife. If you hit the bottom, there might be a lower floor. It takes everything you have to get back where you were before. And the older I get, the less I seem to know who I even am and how everything is supposed to go. With so many signs that I
No,